Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a barista, and I love films. As A.A. Milne once said, you can't stay in your corner of the forest waiting for others to come to you. You have to go to them sometimes. It's like art films. You can't just expect them to show up at your multiplex out of the blue. Sometimes you have to travel a bit into town to see them, mate. Yeah, that's a fair point, A.A. Milne. Well made. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Sharon Stone, Kevin Smith, James Acaster, and even Cred Fambles. But this week is the amazing comedian and star of Britain's Got Talent, Deliso Chiponda. Get over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 15 minutes with Deliso, where we talk in depth about beginnings and endings. You get a secret from him that's pretty incredible. You also get the whole episode uncut and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. TV homework, Ted Lasso season 2 has started, so get caught up on all the episodes on Apple TV Plus. Also check out Soulmates on Amazon Prime. One will make you happy, the other will make you thinky. So I had never met Deliso before. We recorded this on Zoom a couple of weeks ago. What you're hearing is our first ever conversation. It was a pure delight. I reckon you will love this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 159 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a comedian, a got talenter, a golden buzzerer, a travelling comic, a TV comic, a hero to the country and to the world. Please welcome to the show the brilliant Deliso Chiponda.
Hello. Thank you so much. I hope all of those are true. The last two particularly.
All
I'd
true.
Love to be a national hero. I love it.
All true. You're a stand-up. I'm a stand-up. And yet we've never met, which is very unusual. It is lovely to meet you on this. I've obviously seen you on the old Britain's Got Talent, of which you were excellent. And I've always wondered how much of your act is not TV friendly in real life.
Really, like 15%. The reason why I made an easy transition is that I'm pretty clean. I'm not like Seinfeld squeaky clean, but I'm like 80% clean. So there was very little that had to be taken out. In fact, all my discussions with them were more with stuff which was maybe a little too politically controversial. But even that, I found ways to get away with it.
That's really interesting. Oh, that's great then. I really like to hear that it was true to your voice.
Well, I started in African countries, which are more conservative than the UK. So you're not doing the filth which you regularly see people doing in front of hen parties in South Africa. It's much more Christian, religious, conservative nations. Malawi, you know, people complain if I do anything more. You can do suggestive, like panto level, where it's a suggestion, it's a double entendre, but the full-on graphic stuff is only UK.
the full-on graphic stuff, that's why you had to come to the UK. I get it. Yes. I get it. So I would have a terrible time
at the gigs.
Oh, are you very over the line?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be able to scrape together 5 minutes for Britain's Got Talent. I'm starting to think maybe our paths haven't crossed. Well, that's fantastic. And with the 15%, then, I want to know what that is like when you get to the 15% of your stuff that isn't TV friendly.
So now what I do when I'm on tour, which I never used to do before Britain's Got Talent, is I have an interval in the middle. And before the interval, I make sure the first half is all 5-year-olds could watch it.
Okay.
Right. Then before the interval, I say, look, I know some of you brought your kids because they like me on telly, but the second half is adult oriented. So if you're willing to take on the responsibility, they can stay. But if not, it's up to you. And that way I've given like a warning.
Yeah.
So most of them still stay anyway, but they can't complain. And in a weird way, the kids almost like it in an extra way because they feel like, oh, I'm listening to something I'm not allowed to listen to.
Oh, yeah. I'd be so excited to come back after the interval if you've been told not to. I'd be like, fuck yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And so also the parents get to be cool parents because one or two parents take them away and the other one's like, it's fine, it's fine.
And are you back on tour now? Have you been?
I am back on tour now. I did the first non-socially distant tour date on the Friday which just passed.
How was it?
It was great, but it was odd.
Yeah.
It after a year and a half, it feels very strange, but it was lovely. Lovely to be back.
Yeah. I had my first gig in a full like pub and just walking in there, I was like, oh, this don't seem right. What are all these people doing? Like, is it this dangerous?
I also noticed some people were uncomfortable at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I did an outdoor show yesterday and I realized that people are still more comfortable with the outdoor shows. And it's going to take a few months to get comfortable with the in. Also, when you're packed in like sardines, no one feels comfortable anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting that. But then I did find where the gig I was at, as soon as people had some drinks, it was all forgotten. I don't think it would take a few months. I think it would take a few pints.
That's very true. Alcohol works better than time.
So are you also doing club gigs or are you just doing your tour?
So I'm doing a mixture. So what I'm doing is I'm doing club gigs and then tour dates because I think this year I only have like 20 tour dates and then more of them are next year. And so I'm doing club gigs in between to polish the tour, really. Yeah. Because I wrote the tour trying it out on Zoom.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's not the same.
Right.
It's not the same. So I'm polishing the tour even though I'm touring it because every time I do it in a club, I figure it out more.
Wow. So in lockdown, were you alone in lockdown, May?
I was alone for the first 4 months, which was depressing.
Yeah.
Like depressing and really like, I don't know if I would have managed the whole 18 months. But then around month five, I had a friend who was in a very abusive situation and she was stuck. And so I told her, just move in with me. My place is small. We'll make it work. And then I was now living with this person who had nowhere to go. And, you know, as much as it was difficult in some respects, it was so much better than alone.
Wow, man. That's amazing. Oh, I've forgotten to tell you something.
Just surprise me. It's all good.
Okay. Well, yeah, it may come as a surprise. I actually should have said it at the beginning. I was making notes. I did. This was one of my notes, but I should. It's awkward. I'll just say it. At least say, you've died. You're dead.
No.
Yeah.
No, I had so much left to do.
I know you had this whole tour. You just figured it out.
Yeah.
Did anyone film it? Oh, fuck.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'm
no.
So sorry, man. How did you die?
It actually makes sense because I did a gig and the gig went so well that afterwards they stormed the stage to carry me off.
Yeah.
And I think they trampled me to death. So I died in a fan stampede. I think that was it.
You were trampled by love.
Yes. If you've got to go, it's very painful, but at least you're leaving in a positive emotion.
Listen, I think the Hallmark Channel one day will make a film called Trampled by Love, the Delisa Chaponda story.
Love it. Oh,
that's a good way to go. Do you worry about death?
I don't worry about death. I worry about the death of family. and the death of friends, but I don't worry about my own death, right? Yeah. That's the main thing. I just worry about losing people.
Yeah. And what do you think happens when you die?
I believe there's a next stage, if not many next stages. So I don't believe it's over. Yeah. I'm not sure what it is, but I definitely believe that there's something different that happens. And I actually think it might be even different for different people because everything's complicated.
Yes, because everything's complicated.
Yeah, because I'm always like, the world is so complicated with different flora and fauna, and there's so much complexity in life. Why do people think death will be simple?
Yeah, yeah. So you think it's like a different level, like as in, do you believe then based on merit, as in if you've lived a good life?
No, I'll explain a metaphor which resonated with me. So I'm not even sure what religion I am, but for a while I thought I was Baha'i. Now I'm not sure, but I agree with a lot of the Baha'i faith. And one of the metaphors which one of them said to me was, you know, when you're a baby, you've got fingers and you've got eyes. You don't use them. You don't know what they're for. They don't matter when you're in a fetus. And then you're born and suddenly these things have a reason. And similarly, when you're alive, there's stuff which doesn't make any sense, like suffering, things which puzzle us. And then when you go to the next stage, they're like the fingers and eyes, and you suddenly understand why these things happened, right? And that I've always thought, there's a stage which we don't understand, but we're being prepared for, that is coming up.
That's one of the best things I've ever heard. If you want to go now, you can. That was incredible.
No, because I remember when the person said it, it just felt, you know, when things just resonate, they feel true, even though you don't know why. There was something about it where I was like, yeah, this seems to be.
God, it's so interesting, particularly about like the suffering and stuff. If you go to the next level and you're like, oh yeah, cool. So I use that for blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I really like that. That's very good. And you're not scared of your own death.
I'm not scared of my own death. I mean, like, when I'm in a plane and it starts turbulence, I'm like, ah, I feel the fear. In that moment, I feel fear. Mm. Like, you know, when I was in a car and we were rear-ended, I felt fear in that moment. But I don't think about death when I'm not in a moment where it's showed its face.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. Well, I've got some news for you. There is a heaven. There is a next stage. And
thank heavens.
You're right. It's different for different people. Your one is fucking brilliant. Your one is top banana. And it's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
My favorite thing is probably, I don't know if this will get me ejected from heaven. Half naked women.
Okay.
So just my answer is getting me demoted to hell.
So this heaven, it's absolutely full of half-naked women. And by the way, they've all got tremendous personalities and they're completely autonomous. They're not there to please you. They just happen
to
be half-naked.
They're just there.
They're everywhere. And in this heaven, they're very excited to see you, all these half-naked women. They're very excited to see you. As usual, I imagine. But in this place, what they want to know about is your life through the medium of film.
Yes.
First thing they ask you is, what is the first film that you remember seeing, Delisa Chiponda?
The first film I remember seeing is actually My Fair Lady.
No shit.
Yes.
That's my mum's first film.
No.
Go on.
When I lived in Zambia, where I was born, we only owned like three movies for the first 6-7 years of my life. And I was not allowed to watch one of them, which was Scarface.
Oh, nice. Right?
And I was not interested in another one of them, which was Kramer versus Kramer. But I loved My Fair Lady. I remember watching it and I was like, wow, it was singing and dancing and all sorts. And I must have watched it like 70 times when I was a little kid because it was the one I was allowed to watch. Then we got Sound of Music and I was also allowed to watch that. And I think musicals were just, my parents were like, kids can watch this.
Yeah, I love that. Do you have siblings?
Yes, I have three older siblings.
Wow. And so what's the age difference to you?
So 4 before the next one and then two. So 4, 6, 8.
Okay. So you are the baby.
Yes.
And you're watching. Are they watching with you? Were you on your own?
Yeah. It's interesting because I barely remember it because I was so young. I just remember singing along because it's not even that I remember the movie itself because I was so young, but I have memories of singing along to the songs which I liked.
What's your favorite song from My Fair Lady?
My favorite song as an adult now, I don't think I appreciated the humor back then, was Just You Wait, Henry Higgins, Just You Wait, where she's fantasizing about killing him. Well, when I was a little kid, it was Lots of Chocolate for me to eat. But now as an adult, I love the homicidal fantasies she has.
Just putting out there to anyone who's listening who may be a Broadway producer, would you be interested in playing Henry Higgins in a version of my...
Oh, I would love to do. I would love to do Henry Higgins. It would almost be like my life has been built up to this moment.
Oh my God.
And that would suit much more than like I'm doing a panto for the first time.
Are you?
And, you know, I don't know if I'll be suited to this. Something like Henry Higgins. I know. I would know how to do that.
He's part of you. What panto are you doing?
Well, it's not yet confirmed, but it seems like I'll be one of the funny characters like Simple Sam or Wishy Washy or something like that one of these. And I've never done it before because it's very British.
Yeah, it doesn't exist
anywhere
else.
And the first time I went to watch one, I did not understand what was going on. But I feel like I've been here enough that I can now do it. It's a very unique sense of humor.
I'm going to tell you something, Deliso. I've seen maybe 3 or 4 pandas in my life, and I don't understand what is going on. And I'm British.
Yes.
I do not understand what is going on.
It's very weird. It's very so weird, very unique.
Yeah. And it is weird that it isn't anywhere else. But then I'm also like, well, how would you translate this anywhere else?
Well, interestingly, I think, you know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yes.
Is as close to a panto that people in the rest of the world have been introduced to because it was written by someone British, but it has all that yelling at the screen and yelling and stuff like that, which, again, why are you yelling at people on stage during a show? I don't understand it. But again, it's very... And also, it's a fact that, is it for adults? Is it for kids? It's
I
for
don't
kids.
Know.
But that joke's not for kids. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
That would be so interesting as someone who has been taught to deal with hecklers. If you've actively got an audience shouting at
yes.
you might be horrible in this panto. Shut up! Shut up!
I'll be giving them put downs and insulting them exactly.
That's really interesting. Okay, what is the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier?
Well, this is the thing: is I haven't cried since I was 11. Okay, so I don't cry.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, I went to an all-boys school first, where there was a lot of bullying, a lot of violence, a lot of stuff like that, and I know this isn't the truth, but to my kid self, crying was them winning.
Wow.
And there was a time when I thought to myself, yeah, you can beat me up, but I'm not going to give you the win of making me cry. And so I forced myself not to. So many years later, I was like, oh, actually, it's healthy to cry and so on. And then I tried to cry and I couldn't make myself cry. And that's where actually this, what my answer would be is, the movie which I tried to make myself cry with, because I watched a movie and I felt myself welling up, but I didn't cry. So then I watched the scene again and I watched the scene again trying to get there. And it was actually, I don't know if you've ever watched Mr. Holland's Opus.
Oh my God, I have watched it. Was it Beautiful Boy? Beautiful
you know the scene? Oh no, it wasn't Beautiful Boy. It was at the end, he's been unappreciated his whole life,
when
they play
his opus.
They play his opus to him. And when he goes up to conduct his opus and he wells up and then he starts, that got me. And I was like, oh, I'm going to cry. And it didn't happen. But I felt the emotion.
That's so fascinating. So you haven't cried because of that bloody school since you were 11. Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, I used to cry a lot. When I was at that school. And it was just, it was always like, I always felt like I was losing in the corner of a dormitory weeping. And it was just like, no, I'm not going to let him win. And I'm not the only one. I know a lot of people do this. And then much later in life, when you know it's healthy, it's hard to reverse what you spent years forcing yourself to stop doing.
And I guess it's a thing with you. I mean, I relate to some of this, as in I'm still not comfortable crying in front of anyone, but I can do it on my own in the cinema. That is what
Cinema, right?
Yeah, if I'm on my own, sure.
Yes, I'll do it. I also think it's always, there's something about people being appreciated that gets me, because I almost, again, I felt myself welling up. Did you watch Judy, which is about Judy Garland?
No, I have not seen that one.
There's a scene where she can't sing because she's so emotional. Hmm. And these two gay people who are her fans, who've her been fans, coming every day, they stand up and they start singing for her. And then she gets enough strength. And again, it got me. I don't ever, never do I well up when it's tragedy, like someone dies. But it's that kind of people being appreciated, kind of that thing gets me. That gets me.
I worry, I guess the worry is if you did finally cry, you'd never stop. Because you've so many years.
I'm catching up for over 20 years. Just
my God. For the listener, if you've never seen Mr. Holland's Opus.
I've always said Opus.
There's a sequence in it. He's a music teacher, and there's a sequence. He has a deaf son, and his son, and he gets frustrated with his son because his son, he sort of has a falling out with his son. His son's difficult, and it's because he sort of claims, well, he doesn't understand music, right? Because the son is deaf.
Yes.
And eventually he puts on a show for the son that is a light show that is kind of designed to express music to his son.
Yes, exactly.
Where he sings to him and mimes Beautiful Boy by John Lennon. Oh my God, I'm crying telling you it.
It's fantastic, isn't it? It's a fantastic movie. It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, lovely answer. Lovely answer, hasn't come up. 10 points. What's the film that scared you the most? What about being scared? Do you like it?
Being scared, I like fear, like psychological fear. Mm-hmm. I don't like jump scares.
Okay.
And the film which I think scared me the most, it had me on edge the whole way, was 28 Days Later. And I'll tell you why. Because in most horror movies, the music tells you what's coming. So if there's a monster, it goes, the music is making you expect it. In 28 Days Later, I believe it was Danny Boyle, he did it with no music cues. It was just silence. And then the silence then ended up making you more tense because it never stops and it could be at any moment. Oh, that really got me. Really got me.
Very, very good. Very good answer. What is the film that you love, but people don't like it? Critically, it's not acclaimed, but you stand by it.
100%. I'm sure other people have said it, but it's Star Wars The Phantom Menace. So much backlash. So many people to this day going on about it. I love it. I loved it then. I love it now. If I'm having a bad day, I just watch a bunch of Star Wars movies. I don't understand the backlash. Oh my God. I just love it. And anytime someone starts talking crap about it, I'm like, leave George Lucas alone. Okay? Okay? It's lovely.
Oh, that's great. You stand up for it. Have you, you must have, and for the listener, I don't, look, maybe this is a well-worn path, but I only found it out in the, I think Jason shared it with us in the Ted Lasso writers room, little backstage secret for you there. The theory that Jar Jar Binks was intended to be the villain of the prequel trilogy. Have you ever heard that theory?
I've heard that theory, and I know that was just it's just people love doing fun theories. I think there's no way he was.
It's a pretty solid theory. He's got the guy who came up with it has so much evidence to back it up. And the idea was, the plan was, he was going to be the villain, but people hated him so much they had to change the story. It's a good idea.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea.
I really like it. What's the film that you used to love? You loved it with all your heart, and then you've watched it recently and you've thought, oh no, that is not for me.
Well, it's interesting because I think it's when you get additional information, you can't enjoy old things. So
additional information ruins everything.
So Robinson Crusoe, right? Which I loved as a kid. I don't know if you've watched Robinson Crusoe, but Robinson Crusoe in the book, once you've read the book, do you know what he was up to before he got marooned?
No, but I do know
he was selling slaves.
Yes, okay.
Okay. He was selling slaves. I cannot. I
didn't know that. That's what he was. He was on his boat for. He was on.
That
his
was
way
what he was. That's what he was. He was a slaver who got marooned, and then he finds this. And you would think when you see the plot that okay, he's marooned, and then he meets this guy, Man Friday. This is going to be a thing where he learns to value the kind of person he used to order around. No. He just orders him around too. I was like, I can't watch it now. I can't watch it now knowing the, you know, colonial mindset of Daniel Defoe and so on. But yeah, I can't watch it.
So he was on a boat with slaves. He gets shipwrecked. Man Friday is not one of the slaves. Man Friday is on the island.
No, he's a native on the island, a cannibal, who he meets and convinces out of being a cannibal, makes him a Christian, but also essentially makes him his servant.
And how easy, like, how quickly does that happen? So he's gone from having loads of slaves to just one.
It happens really, really quickly. And again, they could have been written as equals, you know what I mean? Like, he makes. Yeah. Also, in fact, he knows nothing about surviving on an island. He only survives because of the knowledge of this savage.
How does it end?
So it all ends happily.
Does he take Man Friday with him?
Yeah. And he just doesn't. That's not in the book. That's it. But he doesn't learn anything. He doesn't learn anything.
God, that is so bleak. I did not know that was the story. Yeah. Right. Robinson Crusoe.
In every movie version, none of that's in it. Right. But now that I know that that's the real version, that's where the book comes from, doesn't matter if Disney or anyone makes a version, I'll be like, you're leaving out a very significant detail, aren't you?
That's so fascinating as well. And if you know anything about, like, notes you get from producers about making characters likable, it's amazing that there was a writer who said, I've got this story and the lead character, you'll love him. Will we love him? Yeah, he's a slave. He's a what? He's a slave.
Yes. Oh, yes, okay. But I think it also shows you in that time, it wasn't even considered negative. It was just like, I'm creating a character. What should I make him? A carpenter? He sells slaves? Like, let's do slaves. It was not remotely considered negative.
Yeah, what's going to be more useful for the story? If he's a carpenter, he's probably not going to have that much struggle on the island. He's a slaver? Yeah. That's cool.
That's it.
That's extraordinary. All right, I'm giving you 30 points for that because I learned some.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City Branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it special to you.
Well, it initially started out very awkward. So I watched, I think it's called A Guy and Two Girls. It's with Robert Downey Jr., right?
Oh, yes. It's a James Toback film, I believe.
That's the one. And I happened to, by just the luck of flipping channels, start watching this with my mother. Extremely awkward, right? because, you know, essentially it's about a threesome and infidelity and all this stuff. Very awkward, but led to the most crazy open discussion about morality and fidelity and marriage and secrets of my mother's marriage and stuff that would never have come up. But because we were just talking about this movie, I found out so much that I would never have wanted to ask my mother. Do you know what I mean? It led to this fascinating conversation.
Wow. And no regrets? Now you know your additional information?
No regrets. It was really interesting because it was triggered by a line in the movie, which I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, people are more complicated than you think. Mm. And my mother was agreeing with that and going on, and because I didn't believe it was realistic, and she felt it was realistic. And then she started telling me that you're young, but, you know, people are much more complicated than you think. This sort of stuff happened, and she explained, and it was crazy.
That is fascinating. And now you're older, are you like, oh yeah, people are fucking, everyone's incredibly complicated.
Yes. I think I've also realized that a normal relationship is a myth.
Correct.
And yeah, your whole life, all your up till your 20s, you are expecting a normal relationship.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think it is also why, I mean, it's almost a cliche to say, but it's true, is that most love stories in the mainstream are about people getting together. They're not about afterwards.
They're not about afterwards because afterwards is messy. And you can't have that nice, simple cherry on top ending unless you end it before things get complicated. But there's a book I love, Time Traveler's Wife, which is actually a horrible movie. But the book has this amazing scene where someone is saying, oh, you know, the reason why Lois Lane doesn't find out that Superman is Superman is it makes for more interesting stories. And the woman who's the main character is like, no, I don't think you're right at all. I think it's more interesting if she knew. And because she knows that her husband time travels, and it creates all kinds of interesting things.
Man, that's really good stuff. That's really good stuff. Deliso Chiponda, what is the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Now, this is going to sound very weird, but I actually think the sexiest film I've ever seen is Interview with a Vampire.
That makes sense. It's a very sexy film.
It's got fangs and this kind of danger, and it's set in this previous era, and it's just oozing sexuality. It's just, and I was like, I don't know if that is the response I'm meant to be having to this movie, but it is very exciting.
Yeah, and there's a great scene where they all in a where it's a show. There's a show going on, and they bring up a woman from the audience, and then they all eat her, and the audience aren't sure if it's real, and everyone sort of claps, and then it's like, oh, what's happened?
And I think it's all shot in a way to play with you, because even though it's horrific, it's all shot very stylistically and sexy. Yes, very much Interview with a Vampire.
I mean, an excellent answer. It says a lot about you. I love it, which makes me now very excited and nervous about the subcategory question, which is troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. A film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should.
Now, interestingly, I've screwed it up.
Oh, it was Interview with the Vampire.
Interview with the Vampire was meant to be that answer. And then one which was extremely sexy, which is meant to be, is Bound by the Wachowskis.
Ah, Bound is sexy as fuck.
Yes. Exactly. So I confused the two. The two from the wording of the question. But yes, Bound, extremely sexy. Sexy women, leather, the mafia. It's all just sexy. It's all
sexy,
and it was also
mafia,
like practice for filming The Matrix, because like it's all obsessed with leather and the camera focusing on people in very sexy positions.
And very cool shot with a telephone cord going through wires, going down ceilings. I mean, that's sexy alone.
100%. 100%.
Oh, the telephone cord bit. Oh, sexy film.
Yes. So that was the one which And no shame, yes, I consider it extremely sexy. And Interview with the Vampire, I'm not sure I should be as interested as I am.
Yeah. Okay, that is good. That is correct. What is the film that you most relate to, Delisa Chiponda?
It's very recent, actually, but Dolomite Is My Name.
I fucking love that film.
It's so good. And it's also, I kind of feel like Eddie Murphy's love letter to being a stand-up, because I feel like it captures why I love it. And also the kind of comedian I am, because I really love that he was a guy who his talent was just doing it. He wasn't a genius. He was just he made movies, even though he was a bit pudgy and he shouldn't be the leading character. And he was like, no, I'm going to be the leading character. And there's a really funny scene where he is stressing out because he's like, no one wants to see me in a sex scene. And this woman's like, let's just make it funny. And so they made it funny. And I was like, if I'm ever in a movie and I have to do a sex scene, that's going to be my only way. I'll just be like, let's make it funny. And also that feeling unappreciated and that moment where everyone started applauding and started going well is my entire life, because I had a long time where I was performing and I loved it and I thought I was good. And then suddenly I had a turning point where suddenly I'm getting acclaim for it. So that's the one I relate to 100 times.
I'm sure you've talked about it loads and loads, but it isn't to be taken lightly. It's a big fucking deal doing Britain's Got Talent. It's huge
deal, because before that I was, it was that thing of, you felt that you're funny, but no one else agrees.
No one knew.
You know, you're struggling to pay your rent and your family's telling you it's not too late to go back to uni and do something else. And it was just that moment where I was like, yes, I haven't been wasting my time. You see?
Yeah. Were you nervous going on?
I wasn't nervous till the final. I was just, because I literally did it thinking like, I'd done a bunch of other competitions.
Okay.
I had done, America Meets World. I had done all the British ones, like Laughing Horse. So I just went on, it's another competition. I probably won't do well because I usually just do okay in these. But, you know, it's rolling the dice. And it just went so well. I was more surprised than anyone else. I knew I wouldn't do terribly, but I didn't expect a golden buzzer or to change my life. So it was amazing. It was amazing.
Oh, wow, man. That's cool. I wish you had ended your set by screaming, "You see, I told you."
That would be wonderful.
I told all of you. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for coming. Dolomite Is My Name. I love that film. And it is really interesting because it's like his gift was, you're right in terms of like people loved him and love him. And his gift wasn't necessarily, he wasn't the greatest, smartest, most brilliant, any of it. But it was like joy. His gift was sort
joy
of
and just
joy and energy.
Determination and energy. Oh, yes. Wonderful.
You just liked being near him and it. It was, it's a real magic. Objectively, what's the greatest film ever made?
I believe Life is Beautiful.
Oh, my days. Talk
Life
to me.
Life is Beautiful. Yes. If you're not aware of it, it's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen, but it's set in a concentration camp.
Yep.
Right? But the beautiful thing about it is the humor is served in a father using humor to shield his son from the horror therein by making him think it's a game and keeping him laughing. And it was funny, it was moving, and it also changed how I approach comedy.
Really?
Because until I watched that, I was just trying to be funny. And then I watched it and I was like, humor can do that?
Mm.
And that was the moment when I started trying to be more ambitious in what I tried to talk about. Me doing jokes about slavery or colonialism would never have happened if I hadn't watched that. And I realized that humor is actually the perfect thing to talk about uncomfortable, horrible things. And I watched it probably every year. At some moment, it's just, I love it. Absolutely love it.
That's brilliant to hear. I really love that film. I haven't watched it for a long time. And it's one, I think Jojo Rabbit, it occupies a similar space, only in terms of both films were very controversial and people like, you can't use humor in these situations. But again, I would say, like, in both situations, it's like, yeah, but the humor isn't, the humor's not on the wrong side of this.
It's not. And yeah. I actually think it was received with a lot less controversy than Jojo Rabbit, because it won all the Oscars and stuff like that. Yeah. Because it was made by, he put his own money in it. So it was made by essentially the Italian Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
Roberto Benigni, who just used to act in delightful but silly movies. It was like made, like it was as if Adam Sandler directs this crazy war movie out of nowhere.
Yeah. It's a really, it's really good. And the last, it's quite subtle for, there's so much in it that I remember. And the final moment with him, like the last thing you see of him, like it's in hindsight, so heartbreaking, but in the moment,
And there's a scene where the little kid just runs away, like, it's true, it's all true, and yay, we won the tank. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
What a great answer. I'm going to give you 40 points for that.
Fantastic.
What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
There's an answer which is probably true, but I'm sure people have said it too many times. So then I have the one which is probably the second most, which is less common. So the one I've watched over and over again, because whenever it's on, I end up watching the rest of it, is The Shawshank Redemption, which is like a perfect movie. I've seen it again and again. But I figure loads of people have probably said that.
I don't think a lot of people have said it for that, because that's quite a hard film. Like, I don't think people are like, oh, yeah, I watched that over and over again. I think a lot of people think it's the greatest, but I don't think it's like a rewatcher on loop.
Oh, no, no. I do rewatch it. Not that I watch it from straight, but literally if I'm in a hotel in some after some gig and I'm flipping channels and I'm like, oh, Shawshank, there we go. That's the next 2 hours. I mean, like, anytime I find it, I think I'll watch one scene and then I get sucked in. So there's that one. But then the one which I think is just me is Speed.
Speed is fucking great.
It's so great. I still feel it's the perfect action movie. It's like clockwork and it just, again, I can't watch one scene. If I catch it in progress anywhere and I watch one scene, I'm watching to the end.
Speed is really great. And I'm sorry if I've ever talked about this on the podcast before, but I've done a lot of episodes and I may once have said this, but Speed 1 is a near perfect, you're right. It's a perfect idea. He's on a bus.
Yes.
The bus needs to keep going.
So simple.
Above 50 or a bomb's going to go off. And then the thing that is so fascinating is the sequel, Speed 2 Cruise Control, is set on a cruise ship, which is such a terrible idea.
Such a bad idea.
Just conceptually, aside from everything else.
Why not a plane?
Or a train.
Or a train.
Why not something
that
goes fast and has obstacles in the way?
Exactly.
A cruise ship doesn't go very fast to start with. And there's nothing in the way of it because it's in the sea. So in terms of like, oh, what's it going to hit and stuff? Nothing. It's in the sea. Occasionally it might come across something. But hopefully you can warn people in time to get out of the way, because you're only going about, I don't know how fast they go, but it don't seem very fast because there's nothing in the way of them.
There's nothing in the way. And there's no Keanu Reeves. It's just no.
Yeah. I mean, that's the real downer. But it's so mad that that was like, there must have been many, a long, long meeting about what next, what can we make has to go under. I mean, it has to keep going over 30.
And they probably were like, oh, those ones are too obvious. Let's surprise them with a boat. And that actually was the worst cruise ship. No.
So, yeah, really terrible. Now, I don't like to be negative. I don't suspect you do either. We'll do it quickly, but what's the worst film you've ever seen?
Now, this is one where it's just, I think I was too dumb, right? I've watched Jacob's Ladder.
Yes.
And I got very confused. I'm very bad with surrealism and just kind of dream sequences. And I just kept looking around like, what's going on? What is going on? Maybe now, this many years later, I should try it again and I will be able to understand it. But at the time, I was just like, what's the point of this? What's going on?
Well, I don't think you get the answer to what's going on until right at the end. So you do have to stick with it for, I mean, it is an hour and a half of maddening shit.
Maddening confusion. Yes.
But then at the end, he goes, oh, by the way, this is what it's about.
Okay. Like, oh, okay. Well, even so, I don't remember, but I just remember the pain. And
yeah, that's fair enough.
I know that when it comes to narratives, I'm unexperimental. Like, right. So when I'm reading fiction, I want it to be told in a straight line. I don't want letters to be flying around the page in some kind of literary experiment. When I'm watching a movie, I don't want characters to be changing their faces every scene in some kind of avant-garde thing. I'm like, no, just tell me a simple story well.
Right, yeah.
It can be deep and make me think afterwards, but it should be told simpler.
Yeah, the bus is going above 50. It has to go above,
yes,
50.
Yes, nice and simple.
It has to get from here to here. All right, no flashbacks. Keep it moving.
Simple.
Brilliant. Now, you're in comedy. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most, Delisa Chaponda?
This was actually in a cinema, and I was laughing so hard people kept looking at me. Four Lions.
It's a fucking great film.
Rub-a-Dingy Rapids. It's so funny. It is so funny. And it was also one of those ones where, like Life is Beautiful, I was like, I don't know how he's making this subject funny. But it's hilarious. Yes. It was so funny. It was so funny.
I'm vaguely obsessed with that film. I think it's profound, that film, and it's proper funny. And it's something about the one of the ways of looking at it, I always think, is right at the beginning when you see that they're making a hostage video. They're making a threat video. And he's saying, he's trying to threaten people. And then they cut and they go, your gun's too small. Your machine gun looks like a toy gun. It's not threatening enough. And it's just the reality of going, oh yeah, these videos that scare, that you've been scared of. They also had to make these. You might be watching take three. You might be watching take 10. They had to set up their background, you know. And as soon as you make it human, it's like, oh, it's not scary. It's just
very much that. And also the fact that terrorists are probably idiots.
Yeah.
Because you have to be a bit of an idiot if you're like, this is how I'm going to solve my problems. And it embraces that to the most wonderful level. It's just so wonderful.
And it still has empathy for them. It has so much empathy for them. You feel for them. And they're stupid. They're misguided. But they're, you know, they have a heart. I mean, it's a really...
I was amazed you actually empathized for them.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's a brilliant piece of work, that. Oh, my God, it's good. Well done.
So funny.
Well done, Chris Morris. I'm going to give you 60 points for bringing up Four Lions.
Excellent.
Delisa Chaponda, you have been an absolute delight. I can't believe we've just met. I have loved talking to you. Now, last thing I have to say is, when you were doing a show...
Yes.
It was probably the best show you ever did. And the audience leapt to their feet. You hadn't even done your encore. You were going to do an encore. But the audience, they loved you so much. It was like it didn't cross their mind that you hadn't given them all that you had. Because it felt like there can't be more. What we've just seen is perfect. And they ran towards, as one, like a collective madness. Let's pick him up. Let's pick him up. And they stormed the stage and you were like, oh, wow, and a bit overwhelmed but excited. But they ran too fast and they ran up the stage like orcs in the Two Towers going towards Helm's Deep. And they got on top of you to try and pick you up, but there was a rush, too much of a rush. And they you fell underneath some of them and the crowds were coming faster and faster. We love you, we love you, we love you. But they didn't understand the people, but they were going, wait, wait, wait. The people at the back were still pushing forwards. And you were trampled by love to death.
Yes.
And the entire crowd just kept running over you until you were dead. No one knew you were dead for ages. There were rumours spread around the crowd like, oh, maybe someone already got him at the front. We must already be carrying him into the streets. So people filed out the fire exits thinking that the front of this crowd, this big snaking crowd going through Soho, had you at the front of it. But it didn't. You were smashed into the stage. And I came along to see you after the show. You know, I said, well, yeah, we'll meet up after the show. We can talk about it. I've come there. I'm like, where's Delisa? And the stage manager says, I think he got carried out on everyone's shoulders. And I'm like, well, what's that on the stage? And he goes, oh, I don't know. We go over to the stage and there's a fucking Oh. I can only describe as a puddle with bones in it.
Oh.
A bony puddle. In the stage, there's splinters in it. Also, I'm like, oh my God, he's been trampled by love. So I go, right, well, I've got a coffin with me. You know what I'm like. So I ask the stage manager, can you give me a hand? He says, no, I'm clocking off early. I go, all right, so I'm on my own. So I have to peel you off the stage. There's bits of wood coming off with you. There's bits of nails coming off of you. There's blood everywhere. I'm scraping everything I can into the coffin. I stuff you all in there. There's a lot more of you than I was expecting because of all this trampling. There's really no room in this coffin. There is only enough room for me to slip one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the people of heaven when it is your movie night, Delisa Chaponda?
I think I am taking, this is an odd one, but I just love this movie. It's called Smilla's Sense of Snow. Smilla's Sense of
Very
Snow.
Very nice.
I don't know if you've seen it. It's so good. It's so good. If essentially, the little blurb is a little boy dies on the snow, like on a snowy roof. Mm-hmm. He commits suicide off the snowy roof. But there's a woman who she grew up in Greenland and she knows all about snow. And she looks at the footprints and she knows that isn't what happened. And it's like, it's just absolutely fascinating. And the character, the main character is actually almost unlikable, but is just a tough, strong person. And you understand why she's that like that. And it's just amazing. Smilla's Sense of Snow. That's the one.
What a unbelievable and no one saw that coming answer. What amazing answer.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's worth looking at. It's one of those unsung sort of, you watch it and you're like, why didn't this get a lot more? I actually think it preceded things like Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. It's that sort of same kind of Nordic.
Do you know why I think that film wasn't massive? Purely because of the title.
Yes, they should have caught that. It makes it's you expect title. Something else. It makes you expect something else.
It should have been called Snow Death or Snow Time.
Yes, you're entirely right. Entirely right.
Smilla's Sense of Snow sounds confusing and like it'll be boring.
It sounds arty and it's not an art film. It's a really good detective thing.
Listen, I'm going to ask you this. I would like to put this out in the world. Do you reckon you could sing us just one verse? You can do any bit you like of My Fair Lady. I just want to get this to happen. I want to make this happen.
Okay. What's this? Okay. Let me actually just get
But I appreciate I'm putting you on the spot. You don't have to do it. But let's get you that job.
Okay. I can't sing, but I'm going to do this just because it's going to be funny and shambolic. Okay? Great. Here we go. I'm going to do a little bit... Lyric find. Here we go. I'm going to do one verse of I'm Getting Married in the Morning.
Perfect.
Okay, here we go. Oh, they don't have the lyrics. Okay, so I'm going to have to do it based on my memory. You'd think the internet is for these things. So
even better.
I'm getting married. Again, I can't do the accent. This is why I'll never get it. I can't do Cockney accents, but let me just
I believe in you.
I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime. Pull out the stopper, let's have a whopper. But get me to the church on time.
Yeah!
As an aside, that character, the dad in My Fair Lady, it's actually from the play by George Bernard Shaw without the singing, is such an amazing character.
Deliso Chaponda.
Like a grifter, he's lazy, but he's lovable. Oh, he's so lovable.
You are getting on that stage. Listen, this year, Panto. Next year, My Fair Lady.
This is true. This is I'll a start done the deal. Singing lessons now. I'll get ready.
Anyone who is listening to this, you pass that moment around. Let's get him the fucking
Let's get it
job.
Fantastic.
Lisa, is there anything you would like people to look out for coming up? I suppose you have your tour.
I'm on tour. Yeah. It's called Apocalypse Not Now. Hopefully you're listening to this. We're not in another lockdown. Come see me live while we are able to be in the same room.
Come and be in the same room. Trample him with love. Don't trample him with love. Just laugh and clap with love. All right. I've loved this. Thank you so much for doing this. I hope you have a
No, thank you. It's been actually a pleasure. This one's been lovely.
A wonderful time. And I will hopefully see you in real life soon. Good day.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
So that was episode 159. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 15 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Deliso. Go to Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating. But don't tell me what you think of the show. I'm not interested in what you think of the show. What I want to know is, what's the film that means the most to you and why? It's lovely to read that stuff. I do read it. It helps numbers. Maureen loves it. It always makes her cry. And we really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much to Deliso for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics. Lisa Leland for the photography. Come join me next week for another incredible guest. I hope everyone is well. And that is it for now. But in the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, be excellent to each other. Your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor, Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.